You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
To come and save her, better believe it, get on her knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right, when you do wrong, wanna turn right, but you turn all the way left.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Entertainer of the year. Yes, that's right. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm an official nominee for the International Singer-Songwriter Association Awards for USA Female Entertainer of the Year. Thankful, grateful, and blessed. I just wanted to share this happy news with all of you because this podcast, this program, this show is a part of that nomination. So thank you for all of you who listen, who donate, who sponsor, who share, who are platforms for this program, who make it possible, who are guests and who are friends and prayer warriors, all of us, this USA Female Entertainer of the Year for the International Singer-Songwriter Association Awards. Ah, what a blessing. What an honor. I love good news. And I love good people, too. And we have one of the best people in my life with us today. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Yes, my name is Dwayne Brayboy. I am Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina in Robeson County. And I am Bear Clan.
I'm so happy you're here. Welcome.
Thank you. I am glad to be here again, and it's always an honor to be here, and always a good time with you. And before we get too far into our conversation, let me tell you congratulations on your nomination.
You.
I mean, I was thinking the other day about you and the myriad awards you have accumulated in your young life. And I was thinking, I can't even keep track of how many awards you've won at this point, or maybe I should say earned, because you've earned every one.
Thank you.
And so I cannot give an accurate count of how many awards you've won, but I will just say you've earned them all, and congratulations again, and may you win this one too.
Thank you so much. I'm very humbled that people like what I do and that they're willing to celebrate it in this way. And I'm very grateful because I know all the gifts come from the Creator. You know, it's all just wonderful. And I'm very, very thankful. I'm very, very grateful always. And so thank you for those good words and that good blessing and for being here today. Oh, I can't wait to talk about community with you because you've had a tremendous occasion in your community. Will you tell us about it, please?
Yes, I recently hosted a conference for my Tuscarora people here, and it is the first conference of its kind among my people. And it is an accumulation of a lifetime's knowledge and learning, education, research, all of it. And, you know, and I've always said an educated Indian is a powerful and dangerous Indian.
That's right.
So it was my intention to empower my people with knowledge I've accumulated, and some knowledge I've shared here and there with individuals, but never addressing the nation as a whole. And I've always lived under the premise that death is certain, life is not. So if there's business to be tended to, do it today before it's too late. This is why, after years of suggesting an event like this and being derailed by COVID and such, you know, I just took charge and made it happen. You know, and making it happen was a expression of love for my people. You know, I have said it before, I can't go door to door and tell all my people I love them, but I can do this, which is love in action. So, yeah, I spoke about first our history. And over the past few thousand years, our origins, our migration patterns across Turtle Island, eventually ending up in North Carolina, where we've been for a few thousand years. Or what we call Uhnawiyukya, which is what we call North Carolina. And then I spoke about some cultural and traditional customs and such, you know. And I spoke about genealogy and the newer sorts of advents that we all can utilize today. Like, more and more people are getting into genealogy because we all know, I mean, being from a tribal community, those of us in a tribal community, we all know who our people are. We all know where we've been for, you know, the past few hundred years, at least. But there's seems like there's more people getting into being interested in that to see, like, how far back they can go. And I spoke, because I've been doing genealogy for so long, about the pitfalls of genealogy. And one of the things that I caution people about is that because we're tribal people, there's really only so far we can go back with genealogy. You know, in other areas of Turtle Island, I can't speak to a certainty, but I know here in North Carolina, the settlers, they just would not deal with Indian names, for example. You know, and so, you know, like, you might be able to trace yourself back to, you know, like Robert Locklear, me, for example. You know, I trace myself back to Robert Locklear, which is who all of us who descend from the Locklear family descend from. But, you know, not sure about his mother, you know, and so she probably had a Tuscarora name. She was probably not recorded on any documents or anything to, you know, for those sorts of reasons. So we have to discern where we have to stop. Because I've seen some people just feel pressure to, they've got to produce a parent, you know. But anyhow, so I spoke about that in DNA and all, and then language. But
Wow, this is so fascinating to me. You know, I love what you're saying, too. In our community, they say, go as far as you need to go, right? Like, go and go until you hit a creek, and then you're done. You know, like, you don't have to push any harder. Because so often, well, like Harjo in our community, when the soldiers taking the records couldn't pronounce the names or didn't want to or didn't care, they say, ooh, that's a Harjo, and make you a Harjo. And that was your name.
Yeah,
and so your name was probably something lovely and wonderful and spiritual, but nobody wanted to actually transcribe it, so they just filled it in. And the same thing happens a lot with wife, the word wife, just wife. So this is so-and-so and wife. This is so-and-so and daughter. And then you can't necessarily find a name anymore. So, and of course, then we've gotten into some serious problems with, as a whole, all of Indian country, with phenotypes and magic. You know, we can't base tribal citizenship on what people look like physically. It doesn't work. And so I'm so happy that you were giving them real information in real time. And of course, I'm going to congratulate you. Congratulations on this very brave and courageous event and being willing to step up and just make it happen as opposed to waiting and wishing and hoping and all of that. You made this happen, and I'm so thankful. And now we get to talk about language.
Yeah, well, I'll say first that some of the stuff that I spoke about, was that, like I had related to the people that my feelings about in the aftermath of the Native American Holocaust, many Natives struggle with their indigenous identity. Some are perceived to be too light or too dark to be Native. And among Natives, navigating racial identity is complicated in phenotype and in culture, but nothing grounds a person or community more powerfully and indigeneity than speaking their tribal language. This is formative to our racial consciousness, I believe.
It is. Can you tell us why that is for our friends who may not? They may be thinking, well, what's the big deal? Well, what's the big deal?
There are... It seems that, in my estimation, that in the post-Native Holocaust, where upwards of 90% of the indigenous population of Turtle Island were exterminated, there's so few of us left. I mean, what's the statistic now? Like 2% of the population
is Native? If that, 1.4, something like that.
So when we are, there's so few of us left, I feel like there's this unfortunate tendency and within Native communities that people who they, it's some person who's been affected by or traumatized by intergenerational trauma and loss of identity themselves, for example, they may be a thick-blooded Indian-looking person, but, and I've seen these people in my own community. They look straight-up Indian.
Yeah.
But because they have lost their culture, their language, customs, the things that make an Indian an Indian, other than DNA.
Right.
They internalize that depression or anger, I should say, which segues or manifests as depression, which manifests as anger and lashing out in different ways. And so, It's as if someone in their estimation, if this someone in their community is lighter than they are or darker than they are, then they will target them. And I think the root of that is, well, I may have lost my language. I may not be able to speak my language. I may not know how to smoke dance, but, but I'm Indian because I look Indian and you're not. Because you are a shade darker than me or a shade lighter than me. That colorism is very toxic.
Right. Yeah. Yes, and I'm so thankful you're talking about that and all, because my granddaddy used to say that he didn't really believe in all the, when people would say, oh, there's black Indians or purple Indians or green Indians or white Indians. He just didn't believe in that. He believed that you were either Indian or you're not. And if you're Indian, there's work to be done. Get to getting.
Yeah, it's like as far as, being a part of a community or who you are, this is something that I told the people. It's like in North Carolina here, 66% of the white population of North Carolina, roughly 10% are German descendants. most have never been to Germany, and virtually none speak any German language at all. There's a difference between having German blood and being a Deutschlander. So, too, there is a difference between having Tuscarora blood and being Tuscarora. You know, being authentically Tuscarora demands that we honor our traditions. For if we have, you know, no cultural expression to distinguish us as Tuscarora, then anybody could just say that they're Tuscarora or Indian or whatever. So, you know, that's why I say that, you know, it doesn't matter if you are, if there's a spectrum of phenotype or skin tone within a tribal community. Yeah. What's important is that you are a part of your community.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you said that. I'm thinking about my granddaddy. He used to say, if you're Indian, you need to be it, pray it, live it, talk it. Anything less than that is foolishness.
Right. I agree.
That's beautiful. Well, you just said the magic words, though, the magic words, because I really believe there's a huge connection, especially in our tribal communities, between community and mental health. And what happens to us when we're disconnected and we don't have community?
We are like, I've said it before, we are like leaves in the wind. Our tribal identities are what solidify us as tribal people, as a cohesive community. You know, that is so important. All of it, all of the things that make a person part of their nation, the customs, the language, the culture, you know, the clothing, you know, all of those things. And when people lose that, or, you know, so much of us, you know, across Turtle Island have been robbed of that, all of us, 100% of Indians across Turtle Island have been robbed of these things. It's just probably in different degrees. You know, those of us who have lost so much and have had so much taken from us by force, it's unfortunate, but we have the responsibility to reclaim that sacredness.
Yes.
I oftentimes say recovering the sacred or reclaiming the sacred. You know, it's not easy being Indian these days, you know, because we are saddled and burdened with the responsibility to reclaim everything that we lost in the white fire of colonization. And no one is coming to save us. It's not a happy story. You know, Uncle Sam's not coming over the hill and going to say, hey, sorry about the past 500 years, but here's your language back. Here's your culture back. Here's your land back. You know, what can we do to help you out? You know, no, I mean, as far as people like my nation, we're being actively targeted and discriminated against by the government. And so we have been burdened with the responsibility of reclaiming the sacred. And that's what I'm doing. You know, I took it upon myself when I was in my early, I was 21 years old when I set on this path. And
that's wonderful.
I am 53 now. And so,
that's beautiful.
You know, it began with baby steps. I didn't know what to do. I just knew that I had to do something. You know, I saw there were deficits within my nation, and I wanted to strengthen them. So here I am. I figured that what began with baby steps ended up with me just doing the culture, language, genealogy, and eventually DNA, you know, and it was neat. I mapped out, you know, these through my DNA, these Paleo-Indian ancestors that I genetically descend from across Turtle Island and really the Western Hemisphere, because, you know, the migrations, you know, they broke off, you know, and some went south into Mexico, Central America, and South America. And then my migration, you know, and the south West, what's now the Southwest U.S., northwestern Mexico, you know, broke off there and migrated east. But, you know, my DNA shows that I'm kin to these Mayans and Yucatan and Belize and then, you know, Incas in Peru and Chile. So these are relatives that continued on migrating south, and where my migration went east. So just a sidebar there, but I thought it was interesting to talk about that, because Utikahuriat is what we say in Tuscarora. Like, it stimulates the mind. That's really interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, it is. And what I see in it, I love the fact that your community expands because of it. You now have relatives in places that perhaps you never thought, or your community is filled now with people who are relatives and friends and part of your life all over, in all kinds of ways and places. And so your community literally has grown in a good way. And I think that is beyond beautiful. I love that. I'm thinking too, what did this do for your mental health? I mean, you started on this path bravely. You embarked on this knowledge and all. And I want to thank you for that. Thank you very much, because you could have done something else. You could have complained. You could have criticized.
I could have complained, kept on with my art, or just something else that really wouldn't benefit the nation, but would, you know, maybe benefit me. But
and this happens all the time, right? We can all think of people who are complaining about what tribal council does, or they're complaining, oh, somebody ought to do this. And in my life, whenever I say somebody ought to do something, I'm usually that somebody. Like, if I'm like, what, somebody really, it's me.
That's me.
It's like, oh, you just found your next assignment. And I think that's why my resume is so diverse, is because, like, I'm sure the creators try to get other better people to do it, but I'm the one that is willing and keeps saying yes. And I think that when I see you and your magnificent talent and your amazing wisdom and your faithful heart and all of these great things in you, and then you took them and used it for cultural survival and cultural preservation. Thank you for doing that. And even as you helped your nation.
Well, thank you.
Did this help you?
Yes. And thank you for acknowledging that. It does. I never set out to do this, and the things that I do aren't for thanks, but I'm there's so much to do that I'm always moving forward and just always pressing on, but I never really stop to catch my breath sometimes. So when I actually am stopped by somebody like you to acknowledge, you know, what I've done in a grateful way, I that's when it hits me. Like, okay, so I guess, you know, what I'm doing is benefiting people, and people do recognize it.
Absolutely.
So, but I don't think that way when I'm doing in the middle of doing these things. I'm just thinking, this has to be done, so I have to do it. I can do it, so I am doing it.
That's
so
right.
Thank you. But yes, it has really, if I was raised knowing the things then that I know now, I feel I would have grown up in a much better way.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I was raised badly, but you know, last generation, there were so many Indians who did not speak about the past, and my family was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up around Fort Bragg area, this international community, and I had friends from all over the world. And, you know, so I would go to my Korean friend's house, and in his house, they spoke Korean.
Right.
You know, I went to my Puerto Rican friend's house, and in their house, they spoke mostly Spanish. And so they had these very, because they spoke their language of origin, to me, that made them authentic.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It nothing sent a much stronger message that these people are authentically who they are because they speak their own language.
That's right.
And that's one reason, you know, that I would go back to my family and, you know, well, tell me about our language.
Yeah.
You know, and just there was such little left to even share. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I mean by that. But over a lifetime, it has, the more I've learned, the more I've amassed that I could share with the people to empower them, the more it's improved my mental health. Like, this really is our connection to this land, you know? Mm-hmm. This land is who we are, you know? And what, you know, we have, if we have nothing left, it's each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've survived millennia
mm-hmm.
by taking care of each other. And so, you know, I want to do that and continue that. That's something that, and I'm going to make the connection here, that I feel that collective love for our nation and each other
mm-hmm.
could be the knowledge mm-hmm. is the antidote for the intergenerational trauma that causes the fracturing
yeah.
within a community.
Mm-hmm.
When we have that knowledge of not just where we are now or where we were 100 years ago or 300 years ago, but where we were 3,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. our language, it's like, you know, in our language, we've got this aspect called it's a component of the language called a cislocative. And what the cislocative does is it's very mysterious, and even the best of us language speakers just acknowledge how mysteriously this cislocative operates. And it really just, the best way I could describe it right now is it indicates time and space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like our Maxton community, you know, we call that community Tikakunikue. And that is a T at the front of the first letter in that word, and that means drowning creek.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's like if I were to just not use that cislocative and just said Tikakunikue, it would just mean like they drown. They drown, you know.
Mm.
But just that one little word, that T, Tikakunikue, means like that's where they go to drown themselves.
Mm.
Because that drowning creek was called so for when, in the old days, when there was a smallpox outbreak, Tuscarora would go drown themselves there to prevent the disease from spreading
mm-hmm.
to the rest of the people and decimating our nation.
Mm-hmm.
But so my point to that story was that the cislocative is like one of the oldest components of our language that has survived thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
And so just knowing that we still mm-hmm. use this component of our language, the cislocative, it connects us to our ancestors thousands of years ago because they were saying the same thing. That, I feel, is something that is really has been good for my mental health.
Yeah.
There's this sort of continuity and comfort in knowing that we are still using this aspect of our ancestors' language that was being, you know, when they were, you know, languages change over time, but even though the language has changed, we're still using the cislocative over thousands of years.
Mm. Oh my goodness, that is amazing. And that is so encouraging. And I see exactly how that kind of continuity, that kind of knowledge would be so wonderful for your mental health. When we come back from this break, I can't wait to have more of this conversation and hear more about the conference and its impact and what you're planning next. We'll be right back. We just got to pay a few bills.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage, scroll down to Featured Podcast, click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come, another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Meet Norm. He lives with anxiety, but with the help of this latest innovation from Be Normal, he can be normal, just like everyone else. With the swipe of a finger, you can project happiness, confidence, machismo. Why settle for being real when you can be normal? The Normal Maker. New from Be Normal.
This item doesn't really work because there's no such thing as normal. We're all different. What we like, how our brains work. In fact, 1 in 5 of us live with mental illness. Don't filter who you are. Start by talking to someone you trust. And remember, there is no normal.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
Or... Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presence, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
We are strong, and we'll get through this together. But these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Oh, I love this guest, and I love everything this guest is sharing with us. And I want to thank the Adam H. Board of Franklin County for making this conversation, this mini-series about Indigenous perspectives and mental health possible. We thank you for your sponsorship and your generosity, and we certainly thank our guest today. Would you please reintroduce yourself to us?
Yes, my name is Dwayne Brayboy. I am Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina, based in Robeson County and Bear Clan.
Just for the record, I love you.
I love you too.
I'm really glad we're having this conversation because of what it means to future generations. I would really love to hear about this conference from two other perspectives. One is the elders, and the other is the youth.
Right. The conference went into overtime.
Yay!
And I still didn't get everything out that I wanted to. More conferences, yes. So we already spoke about that and said, mm-hmm. but I told people first. You know, I sent out an email and told everybody who was in attendance, I was like, it's not for me to say whether or not this conference was a success, but y'all, the
mm-hmm.
people,
mm-hmm.
you know, was this information valuable to you
yes.
all? Do you want more of this information? Do you want to hear this again? Do you want to bring more of your family next time? And the resounding response was yes.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And so I was like, okay then, we will do this again. And so, you know, our PR person, who is my Tuscarora brother and just a great, great person, Donnie McDowell Rathnawagif is his
mm-hmm.
Tuscarora name. I called him such, Rathnawagif, which means he is a current in the swamp.
Mm.
And because, you know, like me, you know, I was a military brat and he's ex-military.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to get things done like
yes.
I do, you know.
Yes.
You've had military family, you know, and you know what it's like being
yep.
with military people, you know.
We're a military family, yeah, that's right.
Right, you know, we know how to get things done.
Yes.
And so he is like me that way, and or we are alike that way. And so that is why, you know, we tend to be we tend to work very closely together because we both know how to get things done. Mm-hmm. And so we began speaking about the next conference, you know, maybe a larger venue. Not sure. We got some ideas. You know, we've had a couple of people come forward and say, you know, hey, we can get a much larger venue that could accommodate more people. And so, yeah. So, you know, we're already talking about the next conference and the next language course for us that I'll be teaching. So we've got some really good things coming up.
Well, one thing I hear that absolutely is central to mental health is hope, that this conference brought hope to the community. People want more. They want to know this knowledge and these teachings, and they need them, and they want them, and there's hope that's coming to them because they're learning who they are and who they can still be. I think that's a wonderful thing. And so what do you hope the impact is of these conferences, of these discussions, of this transmission of knowledge on your people?
Well, I think that primarily it's because we've been, you know, once the Americans got our land, they dishonored all five treaties that they were in with us Tuscarora here in North Carolina. And these are specifically treaties that was with us who primarily descend from the northern Tuscarora villages and the northern part of the state. And but then eventually with those of us who remained in North Carolina, because, you know, some Tuscarora migrated to New York. But those of us who remained in North Carolina at the Tuscarora Indian Woods Reservation, we entered into between 1712 and 1802, had entered into five different treaties with the Americans. But it's like as soon as the Americans got our land, they did not honor any of the treaties. You know, surprise, it's a, you know, story that, that every surviving Native nation could tell, and we're one of them. So because we've been challenged that way, because they've tried to erase us in different ways, we refuse to die. I mean, we have been beaten down, and I can see that among some of my people that... You know, I talk to them about things, and it's just like I can just see this defeat in their eyes or in their tone and their words that, you know, the best we can do is just survive. And, you know, and I'm like, no. The best we can do is a lot more.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's what I want to do, is empower the people with knowledge, not just telling people, you know, this is who we are, and, you know, we should do this, or we can do that. You know, I want to tell them and prove to them scientifically and otherwise that we are right for doing the things that we've done, and we can't always help the circumstances that we've been put into, but we have survived. We do, and that's one thing that I did put forth in the conference, is acknowledging the sacrifices that our Tuscarora ancestors made just so that we could be here today, just to be alive.
Yes, yes.
It's very important, I think, to not let their sacrifices go unhonored.
That's right.
So I want... with the children, with the elderly, the elders, the people in between, I want everybody to have a very rock-solid identity as who we've always been. Because it's easy to lose that in the modern age with computers and getting lost in a thousand different ways in this quagmire of American culture, you know? I mean, there's so many ways to be distracted and to moving away from the things that we should be doing for our nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I want to propose is, or what I do propose is, we also have this responsibility.
Oh, well said. And I see so many things. When you were planning the conference and I was excited for you and all of that, one of the things that kept coming to my mind that I loved about your conference that's different than perhaps, going to a museum. You can go to the museum and learn about a tribal culture and walk around and look at things and all of that. But this is different. And even, I taught Indigenous studies. I taught Native studies. I taught Cherokee studies for years, Native American studies at the university level. And still, a conference like yours does something that none of that can really do. It causes people to have practical action steps. You didn't just go and hear a great presentation about Tuscarora history, or wasn't that interesting linguistics? Oh, that was so interesting. No, this is actually your call. this is your call to learn the language. This is your call to begin to implement traditions and teachings into your daily life. And that's what I saw in your conference. The whole time you were planning and executing it, I thought, these are action steps. Like, when you finish at this conference,
right,
you can go be Tuscarora. You don't just know a whole lot about the Tuscarora or have seen a whole lot of Tuscarora things or whatever, but you can just go walk in the identity that you have. How do you feel about that?
Right. I feel very good about that. Mm-hmm. And, this is something that I also said at the conference, which was because I was an Army brat.
Uh-huh.
And I was born at Fort Stewart, and I was raised in different places, in different states, different regions. And, there was a, when we whooped the KKK back in 1958, my grandfather was there. And Uncle Remy was there, his brother, and then some cousins, and then, 500 other angry Indians showed up and whooped the KKK because
story,
they were
please.
Threatening us.
Yes, tell that story, please. We have friends all over the world who might not know this very uplifting story.
Oh, okay. Briefly, it was that, the KKK had a presence after the end of the Civil War to keep minorities down. It wasn't, that they didn't dislike just African American people. They disliked Native Americans too, or anyone who was, brown or black, And so they tried to terrorize anyone they could, who wasn't white, and keep this social power structure, this white power structure in the South intact, to keep them as the uberales. Us below. That sort of white power structure, I mean, it still persists. I mean, it's a very pale descendant of how it began, the white power structure now, but in those days it was really bad. And so there was a Tuscarora woman who was seeing a white man. And, the KKK are against race mixing. They're, racial supremacists. And so they burnt a cross in her front yard. And after that cross burning in the Indian Tuscarora woman's front yard, there was an announcement that led by this guy called Catfish Cole. He was the leader, the grand wizard or whatever, the KKK at the time. And he had called for a Klan meeting out at Maxton and at Hayes Pond. Tuscaroras caught wind of it, got a hold of the flyer. And then on that night, in January of 1958, the KKK showed up for their Klan meeting out there at Hayes Pond, and then 500 angry Indians showed up as well. And we didn't just whoop the KKK, we literally chased them into South Carolina.
Wow.
Across the border.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the KKK wasn't a problem again. They had threatened to hold another rally a couple of years later, some years later. I think it was maybe about 63 or 64, something like that. They were going to hold another Klan rally somewhere in our home territory, and they chickened out because they were afraid more of the same would happen. that's the story about us whooping the KKK. And Catfish Cole was arrested afterwards and brought up on charges, I think disturbing the peace or something like that, you know, and he was convicted.
Wow.
That says a lot for 1950s North Carolina, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
But I had something I had told people at the conference was me being a military brat and raised around, and that's why I don't have a Robco accent. You know, Tuscaroras and Robco, Robco Indians just have that very distinct, you know what I'm talking about, that Robco accent.
Yeah.
And that's the way that my grandparents spoke. You know, I mean, they called frying pan spiders, you know, some of the old folks still do, because, and, you know, I grew up hearing that, but I just could never figure out. I thought, you know, spider must be our Indian word for a frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a little older and I was like, that doesn't really sound like a Tuscarora word. And so then I eventually started asking about it. And then I learned that, this stems from the days before we had proper kitchens and we were still cooking on, like, camping equipment, you know, and there's, like, a cast iron skillet, you know, and the handle would be the head of the spider and the roundness would be the body. And then, you know, over a campfire, you know, there was, like, the legs that you'd rest the frying pan on. And the legs that held the frying pan over the fire looked like the legs of a spider, so that's why they called it a spider.
Makes sense.
Yukiyaste in Tuscarora. So I was like, hey, if we're still going to call these frying pans the frying pan spiders, let's just transpose that to transliterate that to Tuscarora and just call it Yukiyaste. So I told people, if I spent my formative years in military installations and being surrounded by an international community where my accent was affected and formed by all these people, different people who I interacted with, everyone from people in school, teachers, you know, administration, neighbors, friends, imagine what. And I'm 53 now, and so obviously those formative years affected my accent in such a way that I've carried it through my entire life. And my brother also speaks like I do, because obviously we were the same way. You know, it's like when people have seen us together and then they hear us talk, they're like, oh, that's definitely your brother.
And,
that's definitely him. So I'm like, imagine what it would be like if we raised our children now speaking the language, using, incorporating Tuscarora words into everyday vernacular. I was like, it won't become second nature. It'll become first nature.
Yes.
It's like I said in my home every morning, we have not said good morning in many, many, many years. It's been Fudesaguast, which is Tuscarora for good morning. And that's all we say. And so that is not second nature. It's first nature. It would be weird now if we were to say good morning. That's not right. You know? So just start today. It doesn't matter. I mean, of course, the children are going to pick it up more easily than adults, but it's still important for the children to learn, the people in the middle and the elders, because, you know, it's like there's some people who just don't see the value in teaching elders, and some language tribal language programs, not Tuscarora, but I've heard of some tribal language programs that are, have a cutoff limit at age 50. Like if you're older than 50, you
can't.
Yeah, it is. And I've said, no, I will teach any Tuscarora as much as I possibly can, and especially the elders, because they've been robbed of our language the longest.
Yes. And
they need
also,
to be able to speak in our language before they make the journey.
That's right. And also the elders are babysitting grandkids. They're spending time with nieces and nephews. I mean, if they learn something, they're going to transmit it. They're going to send it on down. And I love that. Well, first of all, some indigenous filmmaker needs to immediately make the Battle of Hayes Pond movie, because we seem to get lots of tragedies, right, when it comes to people of color in history. But we need some of these victories to become motion pictures as well. And, you know, I would love to see that. And then the next thing I really want to bring out from what you're saying, too, I think my oldest student that I ever taught in Native American studies was in their 70s and had been to boarding school, learned absolutely nothing, had an incredibly Native American phenotype, right, almost a stereotype, but knew nothing, not one thing. And she told me that she wanted to be able to speak to her ancestors when she met them on the other side, and she wanted to be understood. And so she took notes, she studied, she became very good at conversational language, and it was really amazing to see her pour her heart into that. And one day, I saw her in Walmart, and she was speaking to her grandchild, who was probably 4, maybe 5, and asking if he wanted a piece of cake. And she was asking this in Cherokee. And she didn't know I was there.
That's
she didn't know I heard it. But I thought, oh, there you go. There you go. You know, that she was able to transmit it to the next group of people. So what if we want to build
that's
our own?
That's amazing.
It is. It is. And there's tons of stories just like that. And that's why your conference and others like it are so important. And a conference does not have to be big or important. I think sometimes when we take the mainstream's ideas of things for ourselves, then we get intimidated by them. You know, the only conference worth having isn't necessarily that, you know, we're all going to Paris or something. You know, it could just be, the fellowship hall at your church, or, you know, it could be your living room. It could be Zoom. I mean, whatever it takes for you to have some kind of knowledge gathering, that's enough.
Yes.
You know, and that's amazing. And so I want to make sure we talk about how people can do this in their own lives and communities. And I think also we need to remember that it's not, there's no special people that are anointed conference creators. You know, like the only people, it can't, you know, can't just be that person who has so much leadership, or this person who has so much money, or that person who has so much education, that all of us are capable of sharing the teachings and the knowledge that we do have. And so I really do want you to share with us some practical ideas of how we can do something similar in our own communities and homes. But I also want to tell you the story, because I think you're really going to love it. But the very first time I ever spoke, I mean, I was in labor and delivery, and I spoke to my child in our tribal language to greet him and welcome him to the world, right? And he knows that. But his preschool teacher told me that he was, they were asking them how old they are, you know, how, and they meant years, how many years old are you or whatever. And he said to her that he was eternal, that he had always been.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, he's right. In our culture, he's absolutely right. And this week we're talking about, we homeschool, but in this week we're talking about ancestors. And he's absolutely convinced that the ancestors are still with him.
Yeah. 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 That's true.
And so that's the power of these kinds of things. These powers, you know, these conferences are not just, we had a nice day. They actually are life-changing. So how can we, just regular folks, just folks, have some knowledge gatherings or share the knowledge that we have or learn knowledge from others?
And like you said, towards that end, I believe that that's just how it should be. It doesn't have to be in a big formal setting, that space that was rented, like what we did for my conference, for a conference center. You know, it could be at someone's home. It could be at a church. It could be at just out in a field, you know, wherever, you know, wherever the knowledge can be shared, that is where that's the most important thing. And you're right. Some people do think of conferences and it's like, oh, I get to go to Paris, you know,
not me though.
You know, no, that right. Same. Yeah. But, I think that it's just, you know, for myself, I'm not an extrovert, you know, so I think that for me to go to an event of any sort where there's going to be a large group of people, it takes a lot to get me there. And so the fluff doesn't impress me, mm-hmm. you know, where it's at some exotic location or, you know, at some extravagant hotel or whatever. I mean, I've been to those places before, but what's most important is why I'm there.
Yes.
That's the thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, towards being eternal, towards the ancestors being here, something I thought to tell you also from the conference is that I told the people about this. Like, we always say to each other, like when I'm speaking to other Tuskegoers on the phone, you know, Eskeke is what we typically say when we leave, you know, which, mm-hmm. you know, in Tuscarora, we usually say this in parting company, and it means I will see you again.
Yeah.
As simple as it sounds, it speaks to the important spiritual belief that while our bodies are temporary, our souls are eternal.
Yeah.
And Eskeke implies I will see you again in this world or in Sky World, and affirms the immortality of the soul of who is being spoken to. This mm-hmm. is quite different from the English goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And when I explain this to people, you know, that, you know, y'all notice, you know, what do we say when we get off the phone with each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's like, Eskeke. Right, but that means I'll see you again. And when we're on the phone with each other, I don't see you and y'all don't see me. We're on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we say, I will see you again, instead of Nejidiwa, we will speak again? That's mm-hmm. because maybe I won't be here tomorrow. Maybe, you know, I will visit Sky World, you know? And so it means I will see you again, you know, your mm-hmm. soul. If we don't see each other here in physical form, we will see each other. I will see you again in Sky World.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I love it, absolutely. And, you know, this conversation is so important because we all now have action steps. We now have things we can do that will improve our community, our mental health, the mental health of our community. And so I just thank you for taking the time to have this beautiful conversation with us and to share your experience and your conference with us. And I truly believe that you'll do many more great things and that you'll succeed in them all.
I've done so much that I have done in my adult life because of your support, really. If I didn't have your support in all the things that I've done, I don't know if things would have gotten done. I am so eternally grateful for your support.
Mm. I feel the exact same way about you. I'm so grateful to you.
Always have my support.
Always. And I'm so happy that we have had this conversation and this time to visit today. And I can't wait till you come back again.
I can't wait to be here again. It's been good talking to you. Good medicine. Yeah.
All of our friends who listen, the Adam H. Board of Franklin County, all of the platforms that share this show, all of you who donate or sponsor or pray, all the ones who give their voices to this conversation as guests, all of you are so precious to us, and we love you dearly, and we thank the Creator for you. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I can't wait till we're all together again next time. See you then.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com.